And now, the hosts of Surge Baseball and Beyond, Cookie Rojas and Tim Grubbs.
Welcome back, fans, to another episode of Surge Baseball and Beyond. I'm your host, Cookie Rojas, and I'm joined live and in person on the Emprise Bank Pavilion by the voice of the Wichita Wind Surge, Mr. Tim Grubbs. How's it going, Tim?
It's good to see you. We are 6 feet away
approximately,
like that.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, we're good.
But we're looking at the ballpark.
Yep. It's a cloudy day, a little rainy this morning. It looks like it's cleared up, but it's still a little cloudy. But this is the first time I think you and I have been to the ballpark together since we left.
Yeah. It is.
It's
I haven't seen you
in,
since March, whatever.
I think it was March 16th was the last time that we were together. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, no, I haven't seen you. So, yeah, no, and I've been – I know you've been to the ballpark a few times. I've been to the ballpark a few times, but it's really cool looking overboard. And, you know, it's the first time – I've worked in minor league baseball 20-some years, 25 years. I've never had an office in the outfield.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Every stadium I've worked
been inside
has always
down
been
below.
Inside, usually down below, behind the first base side or behind home plate.
That's true.
So this is pretty neat.
Yeah, me too.
The Hickory Crawdads offices were down the outfield. They were down the first base line. Mm-hmm. But my office, I shouldn't say an office, my workspace, because I was, was in the press box.
Oh, okay.
So, and it was a very short walk from the press box to their offices because it's a small stadium.
Yeah.
But, no, this is pretty neat to be out here.
This is interesting. I mean, definitely a different perspective, and it's kind of weird being here right now, and I'm sitting there looking at the space, and I'm thinking, man, this is actually a really nice place to have a pregame function or to have a non-game day event here. I didn't know how the construction was going to be laid out. So where we are, folks, as obviously bad podcasting is, we're situated out in Wright Center.
Wright Center,
and overlooking the field and overlooking behind me is the river and the skyline of Wichita. And it's just a great view. But I never realized when they were constructing this, it seemed like it was kind of low and there's a wall that overlooks the field. And I was like, wow, that's a really high wall.
Right.
And then you realize.
Now they put a floor in.
Right. Yeah. And then as Brian Turner, the handyman in our last episode, the man of all, jack of all trades, explained, is that there's no drainage because the water actually goes through the tiles and there's the drain underneath.
Okay.
And that's where I was wondering. I was like, where's the drainage?
Right.
If it rains and it comes in this way or sideways, it's all underneath. And
yeah, because we're undercover.
Right.
But if it rains sideways, we could get
exactly.
wet.
Exactly.
I love how you can see the scoreboard.
Yeah, that's
when
true.
When this was... When they first started putting the batter's eye up and we were sunk below, and I had only – honestly, I've been all through the stadium a ton of times over the last 7 months, but I didn't spend a lot of time out in this building because
it
was the last one.
It was
one
the last piece
done.
That was done, yeah.
And I always wondered if you could see the scoreboard.
Yeah.
And you can, so.
Yeah, crystal clear, yeah. So we're live and in person, and I think in the future we'll be able to have some sort of studio, we're told, down below.
It's down below. I've actually walked through it just a few minutes ago.
I haven't yet, so I have to take a look. I mean, nothing's
There's
in there,
not
I'm
much
assuming,
in there.
But yeah. But it'll be nice to be having an actual studio where we'll be able to record. And this is the first time we're recording with our actual equipment that we currently have, and we've done podcasts in previous incarnations with it. And so if it sounds a little better, thankfully, you know, Tim had the great idea. Hey, let's go back to
let's
the office.
Let's do it in person,
6 feet,
yeah.
6 feet apart now that we're able to. So Tim, later on in this podcast, we did an interview with Todd Radom, the gentleman who designed the Wichita Wind Surge logo. But you and I were going back and forth via email pre-production on what our – you had the great question. What was the question?
What was – since we talk logos and we talked to Todd Radom, I was like, what's your favorite logo? and I pointly blank, like, not your favorite team.
Right.
Like, my favorite teams are all the Pittsburgh teams.
Yep.
You know, Steelers, Penguins, Pirates. So, obviously, I'm going to lean towards – those teams.
Yeah.
And if you look at my wardrobe, I have a lot of black and yellow, and I wear those logos quite a bit.
Isn't bad here in Wichita.
It's actually, you know, it's funny because living in New Orleans the last time, because Saints colors were much different than Steelers colors.
Yes.
But I turn my head a lot because someone's wearing Shockers, and I think the guy's wearing Steelers. And there have been times they are wearing Steelers.
Oh, okay.
So,
all right. Good. So,
and my wife's a big black and yellow because she's an Iowa Hawkeye.
Iowa. That's right.
So
yeah.
Those are favorite colors of ours. So,
so it works out well.
It works out well. Yeah. But no, we wanted to talk, what's your favorite logo, whether it's existing now or, you know, what is your favorite logos and what jumps out at you and, says, hey, you know, that's a great look.
Well, for me, when you said that, I thought it was a great idea. And as a kid growing up in New England, I'm obviously, you know, partial to the New England sports teams, which, unlike Pittsburgh, do not have a black and gold
right.
consistency.
I think Pittsburgh's the only city. They are the only city that's university. Right. Everything is black and yellow.
Right, right. And New England, obviously, red, white, and silver.
Right.
And
Celtics
and blue,
are green.
Celtics green. And the Bruins are your black and gold.
Yes.
You know, so in the Red Sox, red, white, and blue. So as a kid growing up, I loved all those logos. But because you said not my favorite team, per se,
right.
I started thinking, as a kid growing up, and I still doodle and whatnot, but I used to love drawing. I loved hockey. And I was gravitated to the sweater, the jersey,
yep.
you know, and just some of those logos popped out. And as a kid growing up in the 70s, one of the logos that I love that a lot of people probably don't even remember this team existed is the California Seals,
right?
Who played in Oakland. And the Bruins didn't play them that often. It wasn't like, you know, well, even today, you know, a Western Conference.
They would only play them twice, exactly, the way the NHL is now.
And I would see it on TV 38 on my color TV. That was a small color TV. And you would see that logo. And I'd be blown away that a team, because you're so used to having those traditional colors, you know, Montreal, Chicago, the
right.
original six, you know, Detroit and all that. And then you see this team that looks like Mellow Yellow. I mean, it's this. It looks like Sprite. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Maybe
well,
I love soda.
Put out a logo on Twitter the other day.
I edited it. Yes.
You know,
as a teaser,
and I guessed
yeah.
it was the Supersonics.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I saw the green and yellow.
Yeah.
So I immediately thought, oh, he must have been a Sonics fan.
I did like those colors. I don't know what it is because I love those colors. I love the logo. It's so geometrical. It's so weird. It's got the big, you know, yellow C.
Right.
The penguin's not even, doesn't even look like a penguin.
Yeah.
But then what I found out later on, and that's what I was attracted to as well, was the Minnesota North Stars. They eventually became the Minnesota North Stars with that same
colors.
Yeah, yeah. So that was, to me, my
favorite
logo.
And now that's the Dallas Stars, but the colors are completely different now.
They totally abandoned that, and I get it.
Yeah.
And I should do some research to find out why they picked those colors in California and Minnesota. I'll probably do that later on, try to find out, maybe bring some information later. So
yeah, no, yeah. That's interesting. And what's funny is, you know, I'm a – football fan, baseball fan, first and second, you know, flip-flop depending on the season, I think. Hockey's always been my third, but when I asked you the question, I started thinking of my favorite logos, and hockey jumped
hockey.
Out to me.
Yeah.
And I, the more I think about it, I think it's because of the jersey, the
yeah.
sweater. You
yeah.
know, with a baseball jersey, you know, it's usually just have the letterhead,
right, right.
you know, across the word mark,
mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have a lot of room to do logos.
Right.
Football, you only have that space on the helmet
mm-hmm.
for it. But Chicago Blackhawks, to me, and the Detroit Red Wings were the two that jumped off that were like, and I really, more than you think about it, it's funny that we gravitate to hockey because I think hockey sweaters or hockey uniforms
yeah.
are really cool.
I agree.
And
I agree.
I like the simplest of Toronto, mm-hmm. you know, the maple leaf look. So, you know, I just think those really look good. And then some of the other logos I liked, and a couple of them aren't around anymore, is, you know, Bucko Bruce, the Tampa Bay Buccaneer.
Yes.
Head.
Yes.
You know, it's the pirate with the
yeah.
the knife going through his mouth. And I was hoping that, because I've known for about 6 months or whatever, there's been rumors that Tampa Bay Buccaneers were going to change their
yep.
uniforms.
Yep.
You know, that because that stuff gets leaked because you have to do it for trademark. So when Brady signed with them, I was like, I hope they go back to that uniform.
Oh,
not the pumpkin orange, but I was hoping they would go back to that logo with that copper.
With the copper and the red color scheme
that exists.
Yeah.
I think it would be a good look.
I did,
obviously, they
I did like that. Yeah, I
but
did
I like that logo.
Yeah, it's a cool logo, without
a doubt.
I'm
not a Buccaneer fan. I wouldn't want to be wearing that pumpkin orange
yeah.
or
is
anything.
Is it pumpkin orange or is it a sherbety orange?
Maybe it's sherbet.
I don't know.
Either way.
Sweet Tooth is talking, though. So, but while we're on football, because you're a Steelers fan, and we did talk about this, we do share another logo that we both like for a team that we don't like. And that we like the logo, but we don't like the team, and that's the Raiders.
Raiders.
Yeah, we're both that silver and black with that the Raider
yep.
with the swords going through and the helmet.
Al Davis.
Yeah, that
you
whole
know.
Mystique and growing up with that, you know, the wind is a Raider and
yes.
all that good stuff.
The
and,
autumn wind.
Yeah, the autumn wind is a Raider. Exactly. Yeah.
And no, that was always very cool, and the commitment to excellence.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you know, I don't like the Raiders.
I hate the Raiders.
Yeah. But fortunately, I love their color. You know, Steelers beat them up a few times in the AFC Championship and all that stuff.
The Patriots got away with one, obviously. I'll readily admit it. That was a fumble, but hey, I'll take it.
But no, we do, and I like that black and silver, that Raider look.
Yeah.
And I was happy that when they moved to Vegas, and maybe they will eventually, but I was glad they didn't really tinker with it. They didn't do anything.
No, they didn't. No.
No, but meanwhile, I'm looking at the Chargers and Rams changing their logos
completely,
and their
looks.
And I'm
did
like,
did you get a chance to see the new ones?
Yes, I did.
The Rams came out.
Yeah, I don't really
cool.
I like the uniforms. Yeah. I like that Ram helmet.
You like the horns?
The horn.
Yeah.
Well, I don't mind their unis.
Did you like it when they moved to St. Louis and they had that kind of, they changed their, the.
Yeah, I didn't mind it.
It wasn't that bad.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, it was like a muted color.
Instead of the blue and yellow or whatever, they went more navy blue gold.
Yeah.
It was like a, I didn't mind it.
How about the old Rams blue and white?
With the white helmet?
Yes.
Yeah, see, I didn't like that as much.
No, really? No?
Yeah.
No, I kind of liked it. It was kind of cool.
I didn't like that as much. You know, that's the Merlin Olsen, that fearsome, foursome type crew.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I didn't like it as much. But, I mean, I would have been okay with it.
Yeah.
Because I like the horn logo.
So that stadium in L.A. is going to have home to two new uniforms, you know, the Rams and the Chargers. It should be kind of cool. I mean, I like it. But like you said, there's only so much space that you can do it. So.
Right.
Let's wrap up this segment with what about your favorite minor league logo, other than ours?
All right.
But you've been associated with separate teams, and I've been associated with different teams. What's your favorite logo?
The one that I think stands out the most is the Chattanooga Lookouts.
The two eyes.
And they have tinkered with the colors over the years. And they were blue when they were a Dodger affiliate. They've gone back to red now. But I think that's the one.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough. I did games at historic Engel Stadium. It's not their ballpark anymore, but it was the old ballpark. Had a hill. It's in a lot of movies and stuff because it was a ballpark built like 1910, 1920. Mm. It's in the music video, Cheap Seats.
To look at it.
Oh,
I know what you're talking about.
It's in that music video, which they play at a lot of ballparks and stuff like that. So I think that's probably got to be it.
Mm.
I'm leaning towards that look. And team that I've never worked for, you know, I've only been there as a visitor, but I think it's just unique.
Yeah. Well, for me, I mean, I think we can both agree because we work in minor league baseball, they're very creative. A lot of these logos are. You know, you can really be crazy and have a lot of fun. For me, it was one that came out a couple years ago, and that was during the COPA, which is a Hispanic campaign, Latino campaign that minor league baseball has right now, and teams take on a Hispanic identity. While I like a lot of teams, the one that I think captured my attention the most, the color scheme, is the Flying Chanclas of San Antonio. That, to me, it's pink, it's blue, and yellow.
The colors are vibrant.
You've seen it.
I've seen it.
I've
been to San Antonio for a game.
Yeah.
They keep losing out. The Copa gives an award.
Right. Yeah.
Minor League Baseball gives an award for the team that does its best work with Copa.
Yep.
And the Mariachis de Nuevo Mexico
always
wins.
Nice.
And
go,
I've been there for their games, which they're great.
Yeah.
They do a good job. And I like their marks, too.
Yes.
But when you're at the Flying Chunkla game, and I'm sitting high up above home plate in the press box, and you look down and see that pink on people's heads, you know, like wearing hats and t-shirts and all that stuff. It is a different view. Like, because, you know, I'm used to looking down and seeing a lot of red if I'm at a Memphis game. If I'm in Iowa, I'm used to seeing a lot of blue because it's Cubs.
Yeah.
And San Antonio and Albuquerque, but when it's Copa night, I mean, people come out.
Yeah.
They all wear the colors.
That's
they
cool.
all wear the hat or the jersey or a T-shirt. And so I got to give it to you.
That's cool.
I didn't know what it was.
Yeah. Well, as a Latino growing up in the United States, in case you don't know what a flying chunk, I'm not advocating this whatsoever. But apparently, Latino moms and grandmothers have a ability to throw a flip-flop and make contact and get your attention rather quickly. And I have been a victim of a flying chancla in my day and probably deserved it and don't recommend it. Not advocating
it. You know, I come from the Irish heritage. I think my mom has done it to me. Hey, I'm so not calling. Don't call anybody. That was 40 years ago.
That was a long time ago. I'm okay. My therapist says I'm okay. We're all good. But, the flying chanclas.
Yeah, I didn't know what it was. Yeah. And then obviously, you know, when you broadcast the games, you know, and you're going to do one of their games, you actually do a little bit of research, you ask questions. And I remember Googling it, realizing what it was.
You would just say the chanclas?
Yeah. Well, you know what? What I've learned with
just San Antonio.
What I would say on a radio broadcast, I would only probably say that once or twice during the game.
Okay.
Because I don't want you to think we're playing a second team in San Antonio.
Gotcha.
And I understand that the listeners come and go throughout the game. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not always there.
Right.
So you just call them the San Antonio Missions.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
90% of the time. Gotcha. You know, the Missions left a guy at third. Gotcha. You know, at the end of four, you know, Missions trail 3-2 or whatever.
Gotcha.
But because it's, you got 3 hours to talk,
You're
always looking for information when you describe the uniform or tell a little story or whatever. Maybe San Antonio does do multiple PA announcers on those nights.
Yeah.
So you have the English version, and then you also have the Spanish version. Mm. So people can even hear that.
Oh, okay.
If you're wondering, why is the PA guy speaking Spanish?
Wow.
You know, and I think San Antonio may be the only one that I've seen do it.
Wow, they do.
They do the multi. I don't think they do it all the time.
Yeah.
But they do it at different times during the broadcast.
Oh, that's interesting.
So, you know, I feel the need to, you know, connect the dots.
No, that totally makes sense. Yeah, I get it. So, great talking. It's so much fun to find out things that, you know, how we both gravitate to hockey jerseys and whatnot. And we have an opportunity. We had an opportunity to talk to Todd Radom, and he tweeted out a couple things the other day. Was the Quebec Nordiques logo, which was kind of funny.
Good logo.
Yeah, and you know, I never really recognized that it was an N with an E.
I like when they have the multiple. Growing up, the Milwaukee Brewers had the glove logo, and then it took me a while to realize it's an M and a B.
Me too.
And the Montreal Expos logo has multiple things going on in there. So, I mean, those are cool when they have other areas, you know, where they mean other things.
Yeah. Well, I think it was a great conversation. We're blessed to have had an opportunity to have access to a gentleman who's done so many great logos. So without further ado, we're going to bring you to the to that interview, and we'll wrap up then.
Sounds good.
Thanks.
Here you go. Todd Radom. Welcome back out to our podcast. Our guest this week, and I want to definitely, you know, really appreciate him joining us, is Todd Radom. He designed the Wichita Wind Surge logo, but he's done many other things. He's designed the logos for the Washington Nationals, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, or whatever they're called now, Super Bowl logos, Hall of Fame logos, the Big Three basketball logo. As a regular guest on one of my favorite podcasts, ESPN Baseball Tonight with Buster Olney, an author of Winning Ugly, A Visual History of the Most Bizarre Uniforms Ever Worn. Todd, you know, we met back in November when we unveiled the Wichita Wind Surge brand, and thank you for joining us. It's Tim Grubbs and Cookie Rojas, and Todd, thanks for joining us, and look forward to talking to you here today about designing logos.
Tim and Cookie, thank you so much. It is good to hear your voices. Not the best of circumstances in the larger world, but we hope for better days and we hope for baseball ahead. So it's great to be here.
No, we certainly do. I guess to get things started, when a team calls you, you know, what's the process that you go through? How many drafts do you do? I mean, I know our Wichita project, I think it took about what, and this was an expedited process. What, about 10, 11 months that you went through with the different names and the different brands before we finally settled on everything and came up with the right marks?
Yeah, it was a deliberate process for sure. And I always say that, you know, we think about the optics of what a visual identity for a team or a league or an event ultimately looks like. But I think you've got to look at it like an iceberg, that the optics represent this little thing above the surface, but underneath there is a huge foundation that we will have already built in getting to that point. So it's a lot of research. It always starts with one question for me, and that is why, followed by what do you want to be? In the case of the Wind Surge, well, the why was pretty obvious. This is a new, a relocated franchise. You are starting from scratch. You are literally building a house from the bottom up. some jobs are teardowns and some are, you know, slight renovations. This was something that we literally built from the ground up.
Now, like for the wind surge, we kind of depicted some of the colors and different things. You know, how hard is that? That, you know, they come up with a brand and you come up with ideas and all of a sudden the tinkering process, I mean, that has to be kind of mind-boggling for you. Is you don't just do teams and leagues and brand, you do a whole lot of brands and stuff. But sometimes you're scratching your head going, hey, I really like this. This is the best mark. And someone's, you know, giving you some pushback saying they want to go in a different direction.
Well, Tim, I always say that I keep two things in mind. A job like the Wind Surge Project is a marathon. It is not a sprint. So I am a marathon runner, at least when it comes to designing logos, not in real life. And, you know, I'm very conscious of the fact that it is, again, a very deliberate, long process. I'm also conscious of the fact that it is a highly collaborative process. It is not brain surgery. If you cut the patient in the wrong place, the patient is not going to die. It's very subjective. And I think that the best results for visual identities for sports teams emerge from a collaborative and deliberative process. So it's part and parcel of the whole thing. I've been doing this now for 30 years. It's very seldom a quick thing.
You said you've done it for 30 years. How'd you get into it? You know, is this something that, I know you went to a graphic arts school. Is this something that you wanted to do, baseball teams, sports teams, or did you just get into design and then it just eventually lead into working in sports?
I always say that I was a kid. Well, first of all, let me back it up and note the fact that I am a fourth generation working artist. My father was sort of a jack of all creative trades. He was at various times a designer, a copywriter, a photographer, you know, cobbled out a living in the commercial arts, let's call it. His father, my grandfather, was an illustrator and a fine artist. I've got a cousin who was a jazz drummer. His parents were an actress and a draftsman slash fine artist. I have a brother who is a photographer. So, you know, the idea of looking at things through this prism of a, you know, a critically visual eye, it's just part of my DNA. When I was a kid, I was not a particularly gifted athlete, but I observed sports in a little bit of a different way. I watched the games, I kept score, I kept track of the standings, but I always looked at the uniforms and the presentation on the field. That has to do with, again, my upbringing and the fact that I come from a family of artists. So flash forward, you know, I'm one of these kids who doodled. Most people who work in the arts start out that way. I think that's still the case, even in a digital world. And I observed logos and uniforms of not only baseball teams, but basketball teams, hockey teams, etc. I'm a child of the 70s. There was a lot of professional sports at that time. You think about it. In football, you had for a very short period of time the World Football League. In hockey, you had the NHL and you had the WHA. You know where I'm going here. So there was a lot of very expressive design out there, and it was very inspiring. I went to School of Visual Arts in New York City 4 years, graduated with a degree and a specialty in graphic design, and I my first jobs out of college were in book publishing, and because I was such a sports guy, I was given book covers to create, particularly baseball book covers, and I accrued a pretty good voluminous portfolio of book covers having to do with baseball. Long story short, Major League Baseball and other leagues were just at this time starting their own in-house art departments. Amazingly, this is a time before licensing really exploded. It is shortly before the internet is a thing. Back in those days, you literally had a portfolio. We talk about an artist's portfolio. It was a box with examples of my work mounted on black 10 by 15 inch boards. And you would drop your portfolio off at ad agencies, design firms, et cetera, on days that you were allowed to. And 9 times out of 10, you'd pick up your portfolio at the conclusion of that workday, and there'd be a note, which generally would say, thank you for submitting your work. If there's anything available, we'll give you a call. Well, I dropped my portfolio off with the newly created design department of Major League Baseball back in 1991, 1992. My note said, give us a call. We think there's something there. And here we are almost 30 years later.
Oh, that's awesome. Wow. Obviously, I grew up, I'm a little bit younger than you, but I grew up, you know, as a Pittsburgh Pirates fan and going to the ballpark, you know, in the late 70s and early 80s, you never knew what combination uniforms they were going to wear. You know, whether it be yellow pants with yellow tops or black stripes. And it's crazy, you know, what some of the teams wore, you know, in the 70s and 80s. And it's a lot more cleaner now. For you, you know, you've worked for a lot of things. Like the Washington Nationals, you've designed their logo. You've tinkered with their brands over the years. Do you root for those teams? Were you excited when the Nats won the World Series this past year?
Well, I was down in Washington for two of the games. And, of course, this was a strange World Series in the sense that the home team lost every home game. But yeah. I have to say, to be down there and to witness that energy and to think back to the fall of 2004, and you know, I think it's, you know, the same thing applies to the Wind Surge. Being part of something from the ground up is being part of history. And that's a pretty serious, heavy thing to think about. I'm a student of history of all kinds. So when it came to being there for the Nationals home games, yeah, it kind of brought me back 15 years. And I thought about the origins of all of it. And it was a pretty cool thing. But by and large, I root for my team. Oddly enough, I grew up in New York, but I'm a Boston Red Sox fan. That's a long story. But beyond that, I always say that, you know, they are all my family. The logos are, you know, kind of my children. So you don't root for – everybody's equal.
Hey, Ta, this is Cookie here. Thanks again for being on the show. Something that you said, you know, being a child of the 70s and seeing, you know, all the different sports, because people forget, I mean, there was the men's professional, there was the Lobsters, the tennis team in New England, and all the different things that there were in the 70s. Looking back at your career and looking back at what other teams and other sports did, what brand or logo do you look back on and wish you had had an opportunity to design?
Wow, Cookie, it's a great question, and I am very lucky because over this long career, I have been involved with many, many projects. As Tim said at the outset, I have designed a Super Bowl logo. I've collaborated with a group on the look of the Final Four. I've designed a World Series logo. You know, big events, lots of different teams, lots of different sports. I don't think that there's, you know, and I would say American sports. I'm not involved with international soccer, for instance, anything like that. So I don't know that I could point to any one thing and say, you know, I missed catching that. You know, I would just say that, again, I've lots and lots of projects, lots of accrued looks over the years. They've morphed here and there. But you made me think, Cookie.
Well, how about
an Olympics? How about an Olympics? I mean, that would be an entirely different thing. But, you know, we talked a little while ago about running of marathons. Navigating the complexity of an Olympic design system, cannot imagine it.
Yeah, that's way above my pay grade. What about in your career, the ones that you have done, like the logos that you've done for the different leagues, the Super Bowl, like you mentioned, which to you was the most challenging one that you had, you know, in terms of designing, just the ideas or putting it all together or the input? Which one was the most challenging? And maybe that was the most rewarding, but I'm just asking, you know?
Yeah, I'll throw out what I think is pretty fascinating and unique project that I've been involved with for the last several years, and that is Big Three Basketball, which Tim mentioned right at the top. So, you know, for those who are listening might not be familiar with it, it is a professional 3-on-3 basketball league, nationally televised, but I've collaborated with Ice Cube Entertainment Mogul. And it's been, I have to say, the most deep collaborative situation of my entire career, because I'm just working with him with this. And again, you know, creating something from scratch, A really interesting challenge in the sense that the teams do not play in individual cities. It's a traveling league. So, for instance, we'll talk about it, I'm sure, but in creating the look of the Wind Surge, you know, you can look at certain amount of inspiration that comes from region or a city and run with it. This particular project has nothing to do with any of that. It's ongoing. It's been a fascinating project. And it's been an ongoing thing, as I said, just deep in the trenches, rolling around, chopping it up with him for just about 4 years now.
Mm. Yeah, I've enjoyed watching some of those games on TV. It's exciting. And it's just funny to know that, hey, I know the guy who designed those things, which is a lot of fun. What about for you, for me personally, I follow you on Twitter. And I've seen a lot of your posts, and I saw one of your recent posts. You were talking about, you retweeted something about road jerseys in the 70s. What's your favorite uniform, just for you personally? Not that you design or anything like that, but just growing up, you know, like in the 70s and whatnot. And what's your favorite uniform, road uniform, or logo for any team, any sport?
Wow. I mean, that really spreads it out. So, you know, I'm going to split the whole conversation in two and say, on the one hand, I am a classicist, and the beauty of the Cardinals, St. Louis Cardinals uniforms cannot be denied. I mean, it is a classic look. The Yankees, the Tigers, the Red Sox, those are all beautiful looks. But then we hit the brakes and we veer off into this place that could only come from a certain time and place. And I'll say it again. Being a child of the 70s, the Houston Astros look, the rainbow look is so audacious and singular. And, you know, as I say in my book, Winning Ugly, you know, this applies to several of the teams, including the Pirates that Tim referenced. Chutzpah! Like, you know, this was just unbelievable. So I have a great deal of affection for some of those, not all of them. Mm-hmm. I think that they come from a place of spontaneity. They were not labored over. There were no focus groups involved. You know, but I think about just spreading it over the sports. You know, the simplicity of the Detroit Red Wings uniforms can't be denied. I mean, it's a beautiful look, but it wouldn't fit the Arizona Coyotes necessarily, right? If we're going to keep it. So there is like, it's like you're faced with this amazing buffet with all of this food. You don't want to eat it all because you don't want to get sick, but you want to sample from the best of.
Todd, were you excited that the San Diego Padres went retro and went back to the brown and yellow?
I'm a little skeptical, Tim. I think that this is one of these situations, and I've talked about it quite a bit over the years, especially with Padres fans that I know. Give the people what they want. They wanted this. They feel that they own this, and I think that's pretty undeniable. But, of course, you know, given the circumstances now, we have yet to see what the results of this are on the field of play. I am imagining beautiful Petco Park in downtown San Diego, a jewel of a ballpark lit up in brown and yellow LED lights, looking for all the world like an illuminated UPS truck. I don't know, guys. I'm a little skeptical. This applies to the buffet as well. You don't want to get sick. Give the people what they want. But, you know, if we were left to our own devices, we would probably eat a lot of cake and the results might not be good. But let's see how it plays out. You know, I think it's interesting. When the Padres had this look back in the day, we didn't have mobile devices. The needs and the way that we view these logos and uniforms are quite different. And one last thing I will say, I know Dave Winfield, and I always say that Dave Winfield graced every uniform that he ever wore throughout his long, illustrious career. I asked him what it was like to wear the, quite frankly, ugly, maybe in a loving way, brown and gold of the San Diego Padres. And this is what he told me once. He said, you know, it's an honor to wear any uniform on a major league field. So there you go.
There you go. Well, the National Football League has had, what, 6 or 7 changes this year? That seems to me, the NFL doesn't usually tinker that much. Seems like a lot. Maybe I'm alarmed more because we're in the middle of this pandemic and I'm paying a little more attention to, you know, subtle news. I mean, a lot of the logos and brands are just changed slightly, like Cookie's beloved Patriots just tinkered with it a little bit. Are you surprised by this?
Well, I'm not, Tim, because I think that the reason is right there in front of us, and that is Nike, this behemoth. Nike clearly has imposed their, and I'm not necessarily saying this in a good or a bad way, but it's just a fact. Their motivation is to sell merchandise, and they're going to mix it up, and they're going to put some new looks out there. And listen, in some of these cases, teams change all the time for good reasons. I'll go back to the beginning of this conversation, and that is ask why, right? Why is a team changing their look? Well, I think that there are a couple of instances in which looks are changing to undo past mistakes. The Buccaneers would be a case in point. Tom Brady, when he eventually takes the field, he won't be wearing those LED digital numbers that evoke that of an alarm clock from the 70s. they've cleaned up some mistakes there. The Cleveland Browns, for goodness sakes, they made some huge mistakes with their last round of changes. I think it was 4 years ago. The Browns look like I think they should look. I think it's a sharp look. I think in the case of Cookie's Patriots, listen, when they embarked upon the changes that you're going to see eventually on the field, they might have had a good idea that this era of greatness would be coming to an end. But it kind of makes sense. I mean, you're starting out fresh. And it's a little bit of a pivot. It's not a blowing up of the look. So, yeah, I think it's interesting. And then just lastly, the Indianapolis Colts have made some changes that are so infinitesimally minor that the average person probably wouldn't even know it. But I think they're solid. And then we've got the two big ones out west, the Los Angeles, I almost said San Diego, Chargers are going to look absolutely beautiful. I love what they did. And the Rams, we have yet to see what their uniforms are going to look like at the time of this this recording. But let's see. It's going to be interesting.
It certainly will. I was hoping that the Buccaneers were going to go back to like Bucko Bruce and those pumpkin orange. After Tom Brady signed with them, I was like, that's going to be a great look. But they tinkered with it a little bit different. But that would have been fun. Todd, I mentioned it. You're a regular on one of my favorite podcast with Buster Olney, and you do trivia. I think the one thing that I've learned from listening to you, you're on once a week and you do trivia and you talk about uniforms and everything, is how much more observant that I am now of, the patch on the sleeve, the different intricacies of the different parts of a baseball uniform or, any type of uniform. And I guess you mentioned it in your topic about how you really took a look at the logos and your uniforms. For teams like the Reds who have that patch and the Marlins who, of course, have so many colors, Cookie asked you, what was your favorite logo? What are some of your favorite things that you like, like the side patch? Or what stands out? What team jumps out at you the most?
Yeah, it's a great question. And first of all, I'll give you a real quick story leading into the conversation about Buster. It's funny. Buster and I have known each other for almost 30 years, and it has nothing to do with baseball. I have a really tight core group of friends, guys I grew up with. We are a band of brothers. We have been there for weddings, funerals, births of our children. We've never lost touch with each other. And one of these guys goes off to college in 1982. And back then, way before there was an internet, we would write letters to one another. My friend writes me a letter and he says, it's my first year at September at Vanderbilt. You should meet my roommate. He's a great guy. You guys would get along well. You both love baseball. And his roommate was Buster Olney. So kind of a weird thing. So to jump into it, I've done the podcast for several years now, and I'm very, very conscious of not getting into design geekdom and making any of this information and all of these observations accessible to the average person, knowing that a lot of people do care about this stuff, as you just said, but you don't want to belabor it with micro details that make it just, not a tasty thing. But I will say that I find it interesting. Every sport is different when it comes to the uniform. If you think about a baseball uniform, you have a totality to work with, a lot of real estate. And I love uniforms that are balanced, that have the proper amount. If you, you know, squint your eyes and you look at the right amount of trim relative to the graphics on the front, relative to how the jersey interacts with the cap, relative to sleeve patches, too much can be too much. You don't want to overdo it. And I suspect I am not a composer of music in the least, but I suspect that the case would be the same with music. Too much noise, too much, you know, there's a balance to be had. Briefly, a basketball uniform doesn't have a lot of real estate. So you are hemmed in and your graphics are pretty well dictated by what you have to deal with. Football is a little bit different. The uniforms are very tight now. You know, think about the sleeves that used to be on the embellishments on sleeves 20, 30, 50 years ago. It looks different now. And, you know, to me, the hockey sweater is the classic because you've got a lot of volume there. The stripes are beautiful. The crest is just big and it's an opportunity for the logo to shine through. We could talk about the Hartford Whalers, but probably don't have enough time. So yeah, every sport is really different. And I think that my favorite baseball uniforms are, again, you look at the Braves, which are really kind of a singular example. That beautiful trim, triple trim around the sleeves, around the arms, and even the belt loops are decorated. It's like a beautiful piece of architecture.
Todd, we were talking earlier, and you mentioned that you're from New York, but somehow you are a Red Sox fan. I saw that you posted on social media that your first game at Fenway, is this correct, was 1978, the Bucky Dent game?
Oh, I've got my head in my hands just thinking about this. Right,
you and
now.
Me no. both.
It was not the Bucky Dent game, but it was the back two games of the Boston Massacre in September 1978.
Okay.
Yep. Which are bad enough. So
yeah.
Very, very briefly, I grew up in Yonkers, New York, just north of the Bronx, 10 miles, literally straight shot to Yankee Stadium. My dad was a Yankee fan, grew up surrounded by Yankee fans. But when I was a kid, we used to vacation out in Montauk on the east end of Long Island. And it was one of these deals that my father would go back in the city, work for the week, come back on the weekends, you know, kind of a typical thing. And I'd be out there with my mother and my brother, quite often bored. And the only television out in the east end of Long Island at that time was from across the sound from Providence. So I watched Red Sox games, very formative years, and some very good teams, obviously. But, yeah, I remember watching that 14-game lead deteriorate in the summer of 78. And I could tell you the dates exactly, Cookie. It was September 9th and 10th, 1978. I saw the Red Sox get shellacked. But I did eventually get redemption. I was at Game 7 of the 2004 American League Championship Series, watching perhaps the greatest comeback in the history of the sport.
Yep,
and I have been there for three of the World Series clinchers, 2004, 2013 at Fenway, and 2018 at Dodger Stadium.
That's fantastic. Thank you.
Well, Todd, thanks for that story, and thanks for all your your thoughts on logos, and appreciate your work with the Wichita Wind Surge. You know, we really are enjoying, our brand and looking forward to seeing the players take the field wearing these uniforms. But I could tell you this, before all this pandemic started, there was plenty of merchandise being sold. And I love walking into a grocery store or something around town and seeing that Wind Surge logo, as it looks great. Tell us where people can look you up and follow you.
All right. First things first, let me just note the fact that any logo, any uniform lives in a vacuum until the players take the field and activate the thing and bring it to life. So like you guys and like anybody listening, I'm sure, I can't wait until that day occurs. Second part of it, you can find me at toddradom.com, T-O-D-D-R-A-D-O-M. Look for me on the socials. Like Cookie said, I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter with a constant feed of stream of consciousness. Hopefully always good, always fun. But I appreciate the opportunity to talk with both of you. hope you're both well. Hope everybody's well. And I cannot wait until we play ball.
Well, thanks, Todd. And we look forward to hearing from you. And if people want to buy your book, I guess you can find it on Amazon and other websites.
Yep. Supplies are dwindling, but I have them available on my website, toddradom.com. And I'll stick in a quick plug, talk about hockey before. I have co-written a hockey book, which is coming out in the fall with my buddy Chris Creamer from sportslogos.net. It's called Fabric of the Game, the stories behind the looks and names of every NHL team from the inception of the league in 1917 right up to today. It's been fun and educational, and I can't wait to see that come out.
Well, appreciate your time here to Todd, and stay healthy.
Thanks,
Todd. All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Well, our thanks to Todd Radom. Really appreciate him joining Cookie and I. Todd did a fantastic job with our WinSurge logo. Hope we were able to stress enough all the work he has done in the last year plus designing that logo and everything it means for all of us here in Wichita. Want to thank everybody for tuning into this edition of Surge Baseball and Beyond. We appreciate everybody tuning in. Tell your friends about us. And we enjoy you liking our podcast on TuneIn and everywhere else, all of the spectrum, iTunes, everywhere we are. Any questions, we'll be happy to answer them. Email us or tweet us the questions at WinSurgeICT is our official Wichita WinSurge Twitter. You can tweet the Cookie Rojas or myself at Mr. Tim Grubbs. Stay healthy. We hope to see you soon at the ballpark, and we'll have another edition of Surge Baseball and Beyond a week from now. Good day, everybody. Stay healthy, and we'll talk to you real soon.